an ordinary 5'8 farmer's son tonight. I'm not going to tell you how to suck eggs, that's for sure. But it's a pleasure to be here. And I'm here tonight on two sides. I'm here today on a physical story to tell you what farm safety can mean to us as individuals who come from a farming background and how dangerous it is. But also what a farm accident done for me in my life, becoming to trust in the Lord and to come and have a personal relationship with Jesus. I'm going to say at the foremost tonight, there'll be maybe people in here and you maybe don't want to hear the spiritual aspect, but I want you just to bear with me and hear my point of how God come into my life. And as I look down tonight at faces, I see so many faces. It's going to be a man's night. It's going to be a night where we're going to shoot from the hip here. I'm going to call a spade a spade. There'll be no oil, airy fairy stuff. It'll be straight down the line because I think that's the way we like it. And as I look at faces tonight, there's possibly a man there, a woman sitting in there tonight, and his wife she's got a drink problem, maybe suicidal. She's broken. Maybe there's a mother who's lost a child. And behind every face, there's always a story of a difficulty. Maybe a smile when there isn't maybe things inside. Financial tonight, maybe things are tough. And as for me, it was the loss of an arm at the age of 12 years of age. But to give you a wee bit of background of where I come from, I'm a Tyrone man. I live in the village of Donnamanna, and I do want a wee bit of feedback. Some of you might know where Donnamanna is, but it's the next thing to heaven. It's way up there, and we need oxygen when we're up in Donnamanna. It's near Strabane, 7 miles from Strabane, and 11 miles from Lunday, and sort of Claudie's off there. I'm 42 years of age. I know I don't look it. I'm married to Leon, 15 years. I have three beautiful girls, Lydia, Grace and Beth. Lydia's 13, 10, Grace is 10, and Beth's 8. And I often ask the question, why, Lord, did I ever need a house full of women? But somebody said, you have to take a house full of women to keep you right. So that's the family idea. I come, my mum's just passed away. As I was speaking to the pastor here, he's had his difficulties recently. But mum passed away in May there, and my father's 83 this week. And Beth was actually born on his birthday, and I told him he wasn't getting one of them every birthday, I can tell you. But I have two sisters, Jane Sayers, some of you may know Jane from the Department of Agriculture, she's the dairy advisor. And that's my sister, she's there in Donnamanna. And then I have a younger sister, Catherine. So that gives you the background. 81 to 88, went to Ardigarvan Primary School. I'd be formerly known as Lake Patrick up there where the creamery is. And from 88 to 93, went to Strabane High School. Being the only boy in the farm, you can appreciate what it was like. As I was listening today about the transfer test, at that time when I was there, it was the academic side was put to one side of the room and the farmers were put to the other side of the room, because I was coming home to farm. There was no such thing as internet or computers or anything like that. It was just coming home to farm. And I left in 1993. I went home to the house, and due to the accident I received with the PDU shaft, I left in 94. September 94, and got myself a job with D&M Farm Services. And I've just celebrated 25 years there in November with A&M. And you know what, I don't know about you, but if some old boy had done 25 years in one place, you'd have thought, ah, well, he's well over the hill. And I got one of them watches as well to get you in a piece of crystal and a card to say there's a meal for you. But it's just amazing where time has went. I don't know about you, but it's flying. It's going fast for me. Some of you boys down there, it must be going very fast for you. But it's going fast. But what I can say to you is, as I said to you, the 16th of April was a day that changed my life forever. It was an Easter Monday, off for 2 weeks holidays, and you know what it's like, boys, when the son's home, you sort of say, let's work him. And I had a Massey Ferguson tractor, not that old, bought in the June previous year. Come on in, boys. It was just the first over hour done. All right, this is lucky. But brand new tractor, an NC tanker, told the do's and the don'ts. My father was a man, was a wise man. He came out that day and he told me, son, now don't you mean that PDU shaft? Jonathan McLaughlin was 16 years of age. He was up in the tractor helping me. He was off on his holidays away as well. He was fifth year. And we put sorry out all day. Everything's going grand. And my mother has an amazing voice, or had an amazing voice, and she roars out the window as many as a woman does at us. Sometimes you wonder why they're roaring, but there, this time was to tell you your tea's ready. And I went in and I sat around the table, and my father was reading the Belfast Telegraph, and he says, you've done enough today. And I says, Daddy, one more load will finish that field, and we'll start something fresh in the morning. So he says, right, away you go. But after you've that done, no more slurry. That's grand. So Jonathan went out before me because he had finished his tea first, and I went out after him, shortly time. And as I was passing the window, my mother was shouting, "Come back, William," she says, "and put on that coat." And I don't know if you remember the old fur hood, the snorkel coats that used to be with the orange on the inside and blue on the outside. Many said he went to school in them to keep the cowl out. And I wore that coat, but I didn't bother zipping it up because I was coming back in shortly. I mean 5-10 minutes. So as I went out, I was looking at the PDO shafts running at 12 or 1300 RPM, and it's fully guarded all bar this little bit at the flower pot next the vacuum pump end. And everything's going well, and the tanker's taking a long time. Now, we have sucked slurry to this tank all day, so therefore the tank's braving deep now to get the slurry up, and it's taking longer. But my patience was getting shorter, and I'm waiting and waiting and waiting. I'm saying, "What's wrong with this old thing? Why is she taking so long?" So I says, I look around, and as I did, so there's a little regulator at the front of the tanker, and it says up in the front of the tanker, one drop of vacuum oil to every 4 seconds. And I looks down thinking, well, I'll count the drops, and realised it wasn't working to my placement. So we all know what we do, we regulate the top of the vacuum pump. And as we do so, we realise then, now watch, boys, it's as quick as this. I'm lying in my mouth and nose, on the ground. Not even a chance to say, "John, stop the tractor." And as I'm lying on the ground, he has the initiative to stop the PDO shaft. And as I'm lying on the ground looking in, I can see Jonathan running away from me into the distance. And I'm telling myself at this stage, where am I going to next? Honestly, it's clear as a whistle. And as I lay a while longer, I thought to myself, well, I'm still in the same place. I'll get up onto my feet. And as I slithered off the top of the drawbar on the PDO shaft, I remember then trying to get up under my feet and realising, looking down, and there were socks on me, no trousers, underwear and no shirt. And I remember looking over, and I would say from here to that chair, there was an arm lying. And I remember I automatically know right away it's my arm. And then after I see the arm, then I put my hand in my face, and my face is out to here because I can't see to this eye. And that was the impact on the ground, severe swelling to the side of the head, unrecognisable. So badly bruised and battered, unrecognisable. And I remember then, I can't see the eye, I've lost the eye, I've lost the arm. And then the words of my father. And you know, man, I want to say to you tonight, there'll be a split story tonight. There'll be sort of like a parable with a heavenly meaning to you. There's times we be told on earth a message of warning. And you know what we do, boys? It's straight out that door. And we don't take 1 ounce of what we're saying as to our benefit. We just don't listen. Because you know why? We sometimes run about thinking, well, I know better than he knows. So that was the words, harrowing words. And I knew right away it was my fault. Blamed absolutely nobody. It's my fault. I walk over to the house with no pain, fully conscious, no tears. And I can see Jane looking out of the window, and she points her finger out and she says, "Daddy, William's just walked past the window with only one arm." You might say, where was Jonathan? Jonathan couldn't speak because he thought it was dead. My father comes running out the door and gets me into the car, and we reverse the car to the drive of the house. And I can still see my mother standing with that hand over the mouth. And it's a picture you never want to see. A mother's son disappearing into the distance. Not even a kiss or a goodbye, and not even a chance to say I love you. And you know, I want to say to you, because my mother's only passed away, it's just not easy. It's difficult. And I was thinking a wee Lydia there. Imagine Lydia come up the street some night with only the arm tore off her. How would I have coped? And I think back to my mother and think, how did she cope? It was an absolute mess. We make our way down to Eltony Galvin Hospital. And as we're travelling to Eltony Galvin Hospital, I have a father who's, this is his only son, a son who he loves and cares for. And he's sort of saying to himself, what am I going to do here? Will I get to the hospital in time? What sort of mess is it? I shouldn't have had him putting out the story. I told him not to go out. Why did he put on the coat? Why did his mother tell him such and such? And then the whole blame factor. And as I'm travelling to the hospital, he says, William, he says, hold on to the wound. And as I hold on to that wound, tight as a 12-year-old boy, he says, let go of it. And I let go of it, and there's not a drop of blood coming out of here. So where do you think it's going? It's gone inside. He's sitting saying to himself, well, William, it's only a short period of time, son, till you'll close your eyes for the last time. And I says, why, Dad? Well, he says, if there's no blood coming out of the wind, he says, you're bleeding inwardly. And as you bleed inwardly, he says, it'll go up over your lungs, and he says, you'll close your eyes shortly. And I'm sitting there tonight, and I'm asking you tonight, how would you have been, or how would you have had your house in order Don't worry about the bank account. I'm talking about your life here. How would it have been for you as an individual sitting in that seat like me as a 12-year-old boy and saying, the next 5 minutes is over, sunshine. No, don't worry about the bank account, for it's too late. How was your relationship with the sovereign God who loved and cared for you? God didn't come into the equation that night for me. You know why? Because I didn't need him. I was busy putting out slurry. Taken into hospital that night, and two ambulances sent for me and they meet me in the road and get me transferred to one ambulance. It says, where's the arm? It says, my arm's not there. It's back at the house. It's his life I'm concerned about. I want him saved. Physically, yes. Spiritually, didn't come into the equation. So it says, where's the arm? Back at the house. So what they've done is they sent the other ambulance for the arm. And Jane and Winston went outside, lifted my arm out of the muck and the clabber, brought it into the house. And she sets the arm down on the top of the table that I had my dinner on, about 10 or 15 minutes previous. And there again, my mother sees the horror of her 12-year-old boy's arm, just like a rag, lying on top of a table. Dead. No life. Never to be able to be restored again. She goes down then and she gets all the vegetables out of the freezer and she gets the towel that I dried my hands on. She sets it on top of the table. She takes the arm down, she washes it in below the tap and she puts it in the middle of the vegetables and then she wraps it in the vegetables or the frozen vegetables. And why I'm telling you that, I've seen me go to meetings before and then maybe later on hearing a story of a man who has had an accident with his farming accident and he lost a toe or a foot or a hand or a thumb or whatever. This is what you'll do. Get it up, lift the whatever part you have lost, bring it into the house, get the vegetables out of the freezer as quickly as you can, get it stuck into the middle of it, wrap it, and run to the hospital as quick as you can. That's what you'll do. And Jane was told that 2 weeks before that's happened by a nurse, if this was ever to happen. Little did she know she would have to lift her brother's arm into the house and wrap it in the vegetables of the freezer. Heads to the hospital with the arm, meets Sam's down the road, and then they get transferred on the ambulance. So there's two parts of me running about the country at this stage. I wouldn't need to get lost, I'll tell you. But when I got in that night, there a young girl, 21 years of age, opened the car door, and the car come up and took the arm and leg of her. So she's no arm and leg on this side. I'm in the middle bed with no arm. And on this farm, this side, there's another farmer. And he was rolling back the cellar pit cover. And what do you think he'd done then? As he was rolling it back, he took a step back. I would say he was 18, 20 stone weight. Fell over about the, maybe I'm sure you know the height of the pit says 15, 20 foot high. Lands on his back in the ground. He can't feel anything from the waist down. And he's covered in slurry and, because he was in the cellar pit. I'm covered in slurry. And this poor creature is just about to leave with an arm and leg off. It was an absolute nightmare. There was blood everywhere and there was muck everywhere. I don't know how they would cope with it. But cut a long story short, I was sitting to myself, I'm not the worst off on here. And then this nurse comes over to me and she looks into my eyes and she says, well, one eye, and she says, William, she says, what's your last request? I says, why? Well, she says, you have an open wound here which is prone to possibly sepsis. She says, you've had a severe blow to the side of the head. We don't know how badly damaged your head is. A clot could set in. And she says, you're critically ill. And I just want to let you know that, have you any last requests? And I says, well, my last requests are on the helicopter. So right away, that's they done. They rang to the RAF base down in Ballykelly, asked for a helicopter. The helicopter was sent for me. It comes to Alton and Galvin. It hovers around. Weather takes a turn for the worst. And it has to head back to the base again. So what's the next plan? An ambulance is set in. And upstairs in Alton and Galvin Hospital, in the intensive care ward, a doctor nurse comes down into that ambulance with me. And this was a unique doctor nurse because this was the doctor nurse who had come to faith, who had come to recognise Jesus, who had come to recognise Jesus died on the cross for them, had a personal relationship with them. Two of them, not one at all. And they went into the ambulance with me. And as they said, they told me later on when I met them, 10 years later, that they prayed the whole way up and God answered. And men, I want to say to you tonight, if you're in that place tonight and you think there that God stopped answering prayers, I can tell you no, he hasn't. He's still exactly where he always has been. The question maybe is where have we? Where are we beside him? We're maybe sometimes a bit adrift off and we're not near him. So what I can say to you is God answered and preserved me. That I would go through surgery, try to sew it on, but because it wasn't a clean cut, it was like a page tour, it wasn't able to be sewn on. But if it had been a clean cut, I would have bled to death. And tonight, men, I want to say to you, God makes no mistakes. The story of the helicopter was, is that night if the helicopter had landed for me, the doctor and nurse weren't allowed to go with me. And they went into the ambulance with me and prayed. God answered. So you see what I'm saying? We have it all in control, but God's completely in control of it again. And what I can say to you is after being in surgery for 10 or 11 hours trying to sew it on, they took it off again. And I was sent back into intensive care. They wanted to make sure there was nothing wrong with the side of my head, to check my brain and all. I didn't know I had one. Yeah, they told me I had. You may say, well, you still don't look to have one, but I do. And after a week in intensive care, I was released into an ordinary ward, and 14 days later back home again at the slurry. And I bent the PDO shaft. Don't know how I done that. And some of his hands up farmers tonight on the air. Go on, some of you might be. You know how hard a PDO shaft is. I don't know how I bent the shaft, but I bent it. No bones broke. Fully conscious. When they took off the snorkel coat that I talked to you about, my whole back of my skin and my back was all inside the coat. And again, that was a sight that my mother had to endure as well. Back at the slurry, 2 days later, as I said to you, putting out slurry, and wanted to pray that I was hindered but not defeated. And I'm sent to you tonight, man, and a word of warning. If you're in that situation where you think, well, 5 more minutes will do the job. I've been to too many situations as well, being 25 years in the sales game and the farming industry. No one seeing, man, it was the 5 more minutes was the one that done all the harm. And I can tell you that tonight, man, and as I tell that to you, because I was the stupid man that went out to put out the last load, and that's the one that made the difference. Many's a man, I know a story of a man who went to a funeral one day, of a man that fell off the roof. 5 weeks later, the man that went to the funeral went up the ladder, on the roof, fell off the roof, was killed as well. And you'd have thought he'd learn from it, but we just sometimes don't. After going back to school again, left in 93, and come home to the house, my father had a shop and a pub, and he sold the shop and the pub, and he built this beef house, this cubicle house, this silo pit, a milking parlour, a brand new tractor made for him to walk out of it and me to walk in. And we're no strangers to farming accidents, because my father's one leg, which he lost on the 22nd of September 1939. And for some men in here, it remembers back to that date. 1939 was the date, that was the day that the war was declared. In the Second World War. He was 2 years of age. Out in the field with his mother, a horse reaper comes along and takes the leg off below the knee. And then in 1960, I have an uncle who's out playing a field on the 12th of January. He was 60 years killed there. Out 25 years of age. Swings the tractor around. The tractor flips over. Lands on top of him, a little grey Fergie. And smothers him to death. He falls into a glen. And kills him tragically. And then I come along on the 16th of April 1990. 3 people in 2 generations. 1 killed and 2 badly maimed. And then you'll be sitting down there in the night and saying, but it'll never happen to me. And all I can say to you is you'll be a quarter out full to think it won't. So after being at the house for a year with my father wouldn't have been that generous with money either. I'm sure you will know what it's like, boys. So tonight, if you have a son tonight, give him £10 for a fish supper. Because I'll tell you why, you might think if you go to the chippy and you knock on the door, the one will say, oh, that's Johnny's son there. He's a farmer's son, and give it the fish out the one. It doesn't happen like that. And that's what happened to me. My father had come along to me. My life up to that was going to nightclubs and all. He had come to me and says, do you need money tonight? Well, I can tell you one thing. I wasn't going out to shake the bush, for there was nothing on it. That's for sure. So I got a job with D&M Farm Services in September. And you might say, how did that all come about? Jim Dinsmore gave me a job when I was 15 years of age. Sorry, when I was 12 years of age when we bought the tractor. And you might say, how did you get a job at 12? He says, son, if you ever want a job, there's always a job for you there. And I had 2 arms, and I was never going to believe in my job, my father. But there, with circumstances changing, the lost arm, when I rang Jim when I was 17 years of age in September 1994, I had the job the next day. And I'm there ever since. And that's where I was to be. I was never cut out for farming. Gift of the gab, didn't want to be farming. But as I said to you in 1997, given an opportunity to go to Strasbourg, went to Strasbourg with a counsellor, Alan Breslin, whose wife was really bad with arthritis. And I loved travelling. And I was 19 years of age. I was out looking for a girl who would be sort of single, sort of had a father who had about 400 acres of land, maybe 400 cows as well, no brothers, and no potential threat to me that I would get. That's what I'd be looking for. And I got on this bus. I did do some running about the country in a car. Got on this bus, and I was 19 years of age, and looked up the bus, and the youngest person looking down the bus is about 60 or 70. And I'm thinking to myself, I'm here for a week with these boys. This is going to be a long time. And it says, it's either I'm in the wrong bus, or I'm here to help the aged, and I wasn't told that. So I have to say, when I got on that bus, I got off it, this bus was full of crack. These people could play pranks on each other, they could tell jokes, they could sing songs, they could testify that they loved the Lord, most of them, and this was just amazing. And then the Wednesday night I was sitting down having my meal along with the rest of them in the foyer, and I was asked the question by Eric Spence, and I'm going to ask you tonight directly as I said to you, as he asked me, was I saved? Was I born again? Did I know Jesus? And that to me was like a red rag to bull, because I was a good traditional Presbyterian. Nothing wrong with a Baptist, but that's where I was. Presbyterian, I went to church every Sunday, went up through Sunday school, had my Bible first for answering, first for attendance. I'd got to stage now, I'd paid a fiver every weekend to the church. I'd got to stage where I was sitting in my pew and nobody else would be sitting in it. I was parking cars and they asked me, I was that good, and I was always found at communion, because that's very important, because if you don't take communion, you're not getting into heaven, you see. And that's what I was. And he says to me, he's saved. No, I says, I'm not. And I says, do you see them boys that are saved and born again? I says, they're hypocrites. And I says, Eric said to me, how do you make that out? And I says, well, I'll tell you, I'll give an example of a born again Christian. I says, there's a man at a business not too far from my father's shop in Dunamana, and he came in and he got stuff off my father, £800 worth of stuff. And my father kept sending bills and all, but he never paid it. He said he never got it, but the workmen said they did. So my father thought, well, that'll leave it at that. Sure, that's the way it's going to be. So he thought he'll go up to his business someday and he'll take £800 worth of stuff of him. And if there's anything over it, I'll pay the difference. So that was okay. We put down the stones and everything was grand. And then the next thing then, about 2 or 3 months later, come in was a bill from this man for the £800. And then my father says, well, that's irrelevant. He tore it up and he threw it in the bin. And then the next thing come in then was that lovely letter that you get from TD Maxwell or some solicitor, that you're to pay this bill. And then the next thing come in then was a lovely letter from that you've been summoned to attend Strabane Courthouse on such and such a date. And my father says, well, that's great. It'll be a very easy situation at that when I get into court, and I'll put my hand in the Bible as the born again Christian will do as well. And I'll promise to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. So he gets the man and he says, what's this man here for? He says, he owes me £800. And then the other gentleman sits down. That's fine. And my father steps up into the booth and he says, Minister Sayers, why are you here? Well, he says, I'll tell you the story. He says, this gentleman here took £800 of stuff of my business and he never paid me. And he says, therefore, I thought it was only equal and fair that I would go up to his business and I would do the same to him. And that means the scales would be balanced level. Well, he says, Mr. Sayers, that's where you're badly wrong there. He says, you should have took the same action as this man. He says, you should have took this man to court. So therefore, he says, I'm charging you with all court costs and you will pay the £800. My father came down out of the booth again. Now don't forget the born again Christian had he set his hand in the Bible and say, I promise to tell the truth, the whole truth and nothing but the truth. And I'm using that illustration tonight. If you're a born again Christian in here tonight, you practice what you preach. Because I'll tell you one thing, you're like one of them walking dummies in front of Burton's Wonder. They're watching you left, right and centre. And my father came out of that booth and he says, do you see born again Christians? They're nothing but a share of hypocrites. That's what he said. And he drummed that into me morning and noon and the night, day in and day out. So much so that I actually then said to Eric Spence, born again Christians, sure, look at them. Going to church with the Bible, you would need a forklift to carry it. And on a Monday, they would do their granny. And that's what you class as a born-again Christian. I wouldn't want to be associated with them. Well, Eric says, that's very wise words that you've said. And he says, I can say to you, that sometimes comes true. But he says, tell me now, if you were in the court of law today, and you were facing a judge, he says, what about the man on the left, the right of you? Where would they be? Well, I says, well, if I'm guilty of something, I'm in the booth, the judge would be looking at me, wouldn't he? And Eric was a man of wisdom. He says, I'll tell you something, son Shane. He says, you'll face a judge someday. And he says, the man who done your father, or your father for that matter, I'll be nowhere near you. He says, it'll be between you and him, the great judge. I says, Eric, what'd I tell you? I'm happy enough going the way I'm going. I've lost an arm at 12 years of age and done nobody no harm. And I says, this is supposed to be a God of love. What does the little Bible tell us, the verse tell us? Jesus loves me, this I know, for the Bible tells me. So where's the love in the whole thing? I've had enough torture. Why did it happen to me? Why did it not happen to the man's pulling the trigger and robbing the old person? Why me? And then I would say to you tonight, man, why not me? But all I can say to you is, as I went away from Eric, and I says, I'll never be saved. Just leave me alone. It's not for me. You keep it to yourself. And he says, I'll start praying for you. And I started to pray for him. And plane started landing to the airport that night before we left. And he says, do me a favor. And he says, go home. And he says, read your Bible for me. So I says, well, on this occasion, all right then. And I went home and I started to read the chapter 1 of John, the book of John, chapter 2, and then came to chapter 3. And when you're in your bed in the room on your own, and nobody watching you, and you're reading the Bible, God can speak in mysterious ways. It says here, there was a man from the Pharisees named Nicodemus, because he was a righteous, upright, decent Pharisee. Couldn't be faulted for anything. And he says, a ruler of the Jews, and the same came to Jesus by night, because he didn't want the people to see him. And said unto him, Rabbi, we know that thou art a teacher that come from God, for no man can do these miracles that thou doest except God be with him. And Jesus answers and says to the people tonight in Gortmerran Baptist Church, verily, verily, I say unto thee, except a man or a woman be born again, he cannot see the kingdom of God. And what does verse 7 say? Verse 7 says that marvel not that I say unto people tonight that ye must be born again. And I'm shooting from the hip here. It's a must, whether you like it or whether you don't. And from verse 16 says, for God so loved the men of Gortmerran tonight, each and every one of you, no matter how bad you are, what you've done wrong, doesn't really matter. That whosoever believeth in him shall not perish, but have everlasting life. And I can tell you one thing. Do you see when you're lying in your mouth and nose and the arms whacked off you, and the side of your face is battered and you're unrecognizable, you'll become a small boy and you'll not want to perish. You'll take it from me. If I had closed my eyes that night and they're going to fading off the distance, where was it going to? But that wasn't the case. I was given the second chance. And these words were speaking to me. Because I believe we're born with an instinct to believe in something. You believe in the very motor to take you home. You believe in the very seat to sit on that'll hold you. Saying that, I was my aunt's wake last week, believe it or not, she died at 77, and the minister came in and sat in the seat, and next thing he was on the floor. But he still had the faith to sit in the seat. What I can say to you, men, is that these words were speaking to me on the 4th of November, a week later, in the Banville House Hotel in Banbridge at an auction, of all places. I couldn't have wrote it in a book. I was challenged with Eric Spence's words. I was challenged with the passage of Scripture. I went down and spoke to a lady who was there as a minister's wife, and she saw me as a Nicodemus seeking. And tonight there's maybe people around you seeking and you don't even see it. And she told me, I told her how I'd been on the trip and how I'd been challenged. And she automatically got her wee Bible out and she started reading to me. And she says, William, she says, are you willing tonight to trust him or to reject him? And what I can say to you is in that situation is the words of Scripture come into my mind. And me not even that way inclined, no man can serve two masters. So that he loves one and hates the other. And, you know, there's two sides to a coin, but there's no middle in the coin. So they're one or the other. And that night I made a decision. What was the decision? Was it hard to make? No, it wasn't. It was just a simply realizing that Jesus, after all, Christmas, Easter, all the rest, all the stories we hear about, Jesus went to the Calvary, to the cross, and died for me. What I can say to you is about God down my knees that night, and I simply said sorry. And I was willing to trust him as my one personal savior. Was there flashing lights? No, there wasn't. But there was an honest recognizing of a man called Jesus. What was to happen next? Because my life up to that was going to a nightclub with Nero's, and I didn't drink because my mother had prayed earnestly. And as I was telling your pastor tonight, my mother had been an alcoholic and recovered from it, and she prayed hard that I would never acquire a taste for drink. I tried it upside down, and it didn't work. And I drove, the cousins were done, they got full. And then afterwards you brought them home again, and they asked you the next day where was the last night and how did you get on. These people in this bus had a joy that lasted forever, and this was the joy I had received. A peace spelled P-E-A-C-E, not P-I-E-C-E. Another piece of the jigsaw that we needed. So what I can say to you is that what would my friends think? What would my mother and father think? My mother was delighted. I never told my father I could save in the November. And I never told my father until he read the Belfast Telegraph, William Sayers testifying in the Martyrs Memorial, Free Presbyterian Church, at the first ever youth rally to 1,000 people. That was my first testimony. And he reads it in the Belfast Telegraph. He says, what are you doing in Paisley's church tonight? And I had to then tell him I got saved. But my mother knew, and other people knew, but I found he was the one, you see, that had battered into me. Born-again Christians, hypocrites. What was the reaction going to be? And thankfully, he himself knew that he needed to be born again. Moving on from getting saved, what I can say to you is if the door had closed that night back in the 16th of April 1990, that I lost my arm. I love using the scriptures to tell you this because it'll tell you why. This is where you get the truth of the matter. I love reading this passage of scripture because it'll tell you why people don't like to hear it. There was a certain rich man, oh dear, plenty of men in here rich tonight, with purple fine linen, sumptuous feeding every day, best of sirloin steaks every day. And there was a certain beggar at the gate named Lazarus, which was laid up with the full of sores. And in desiring to be fed with the crumbs that fell off the rich man's table, so that he only ate the rich man's crumbs, that's all he could afford. It came to pass that the beggar died, and the rich man died the same day and was buried. And in hell, he lifted up his eyes in pure torment, and seeth the beggar far off Abraham, and Lazarus in his bosom. And I cried, Father Abraham, have mercy tonight on the people of Gortmirren, and send Lazarus that he may dip the tip of his finger into water and cool my tongue, for I am in pure torture in these flames. I'll tell you, friends, them sober words tonight, that a rich man that had everything in earth, he dies and he goes to hell. And then the poor old beggar that had nothing goes to heaven. What do you think was the best option? Thank God I wasn't going to hell, because I was given a second chance. 7 years at the foot of the cross, I would come and I would bow the knee and I would trust him with all of my heart. And people would pray and see their prayers answered. And that's why I'm coming tonight to tell you my story of how I found Jesus. And you know, the Lord has been good to me, and I've got a job and a beautiful, three beautiful girls and a beautiful wife as well, Lane. But you know, it hasn't been always a ball of roses. My wife 3 years ago or 4 years ago now, come 4 years past October, had a breakdown with depression and anxiety. Was suicidal. I was one night in Monkstown Baptist Church and come back and found her at the foot of the stairs just sitting broken, numb, stupid, burnt out. And here I'm away serving the Lord, and my poor wife's at the house like that. And I asked the question, where's God in the midst of this? God was where he always was, but where was I? Running about the country, but maybe forgetting about the home. And all I can say to you is that we prayed about it, and we got Elaine sorted out. And Elaine still struggles with the issues of anxiety and depression today. But we've got it balanced that she can cope with it down to 4 days a week now, as a special needs teacher in autism. And God has been good to us. It's taught me a lot through it. It's taught me to shut my mouth and listen. And life at the minute is good, and God's been good to us. But he taught me a lot through that as well. He taught me how to know my wife better and how to see it as if I come in one night and the room was a mess with the children. And I says, look at the shape of the room tonight. And automatically she says to me, oh, you're just saying I'm lazy. I never said the word. But it was the next night I come in and I says, girls, you wouldn't mind tidying up the room for a mummy? What a difference. It's how do you see it, half full or half empty? So what I can say to you is that an example. You know, it hasn't been all simple. My poor mother, as I said, passed away there recently. And she'd been an alcoholic. She'd had cancer and all the rest. And she came through it all. And came to trust the Lord at the end of it before she died. I was telling her pastor tonight that I prayed with her. We told each other how much we loved each other at 3 o'clock in the morning. And we prayed at 5 o'clock. And the 7th of May, the Lord says, she's mine. She's gone to be with the Lord, which is far better. Sometimes we need to see reality of death. Because we think we're here for a long time, don't we? But it's 3 score years and 10, maybe 4 score years and 10. But maybe a man doesn't see that. And all I can say to you tonight, men, is who will you trust? There's 3 crosses tonight. Time's ticking on rightly. 3 crosses. And all I can say to you is that there were 2 thieves on each side of the Lord. And the lovely thing about the whole story of the crosses is that both of them were criminals. Both of them were sinners. Both of them deserve possibly to be crucified on the cross. And maybe if you were sitting tonight and you knew what they'd done wrong, you'd be saying, put them on the cross and wheel the nails into them. They get what they deserve. And as the two of them is hanging there, one of them in his senses realizes through the graciousness of a God who's lying there, and he's taking a spear for William Sayers and everybody else in here. He's bleeding. He's unrecognizable, like I was in the PDO shaft, not comparing myself to Jesus, but it was unrecognizable. His crowns of thorns in his head, his 12-inch nails in his hands for you and me, and there he hangs and suffers. Innocent. But one of them on his right-hand side says, "Today, Lord, remember me." And all that anguish and all the difficulties faced and all the despising, the spitting, the rejection that me and you nailed him to the cross, remember that. He lifts his head again in grace and mercy in the last 5 or 10 minutes, and he turns round to the man. And this man, tell you now, it's not about the £5 notes and the good works and about how many pigs I had and how many sheep I had and how well I was thought of a society and my uncle was a great man. Absolute nonsense. It was about faith and repentance of a repentant thief who would lift his head and says, "Lord, remember me." And he says, "Today you're with me in paradise." The one on the left, oh dear, he was the hard-working, maybe Presbyterian, maybe Roman Catholic, maybe Baptist, maybe Church of Ireland, individual that worked hard, done nobody no wrong, was high standing in the community. Too proud to take that on. Hung his head and died. Lost. Only you tonight, as I finish and close, can answer the question of which one of the crosses do you hang on? Recognising the man in the middle that's called die there for you. Or maybe you'll say to yourself, "It's not for me." Well, if that's the case, that's fine. That's the way it's to be. Because it says that it'll be easier for a camel to go through the eye of a needle than for a rich man. I'm not talking about money. It could be a rich man of his own self-importance getting in to the gates of heaven. I hope and pray you'll take the decision tonight in closing if you haven't yet trusted him. Please don't be the stupid fool that I was that had to go around a PDO shaft. He lost an arm to come and recognise him. Because tonight he knocks on the door of Gartmere and he says, "Let me in." The door handle's on your side. I pray you'll be like this man that is in the last 5 or 10 minutes. But please don't leave it that long, because I didn't get 5 minutes. It takes in 17 feet in 1 second. I wouldn't have had the second chance. But God gave it to me. But he doesn't give everybody the second chance. But I pray you'll trust him like this man done. And tonight this man's like the rich. He's in the rich man's pad. And he can see heaven afar off. And he can see the testimonies and the sermons and the tracts and the Sunday school teaching lessons and the sermons that your pastors preach to you. He can hear them. And it says, "I was told them all. And I thought, you know what? I have slurred about it tomorrow. It's no, I'm not even interested in that fellow up the front. Too late." And you'll hear them words of Matthew as I close. And I said I was closing, but I genuinely am closing now. I'll just read them out to you, as we know in Matthew 26. And again, I think these are sobering words. Jesus tells of the final judgment. Matthew 25. These will be the words you will maybe hear someday. Verse 41. Then he said to them on his left hand, "Depart from me, cursed, into the everlasting fire, prepared for the devil and his angels, for I never knew you." Only you can answer that question tonight, and I pray you will trust him. Please, please, please trust him. Can't say it enough. I thank God. Whatever day I see him face to face, I'll have 2 arms again. My mother, she'll see me with an arm again that she never saw me in the majority of my life. I'll see others that I'll know who have left the same time, and think of the ones that as missionaries have been killed out in the Congo or wherever, walking the streets of gold. No more tears, no more cancer, no more slurry, no more single farm payment, no more nitrates, no more storming, no more nonsense of the stupid world that we live in. What is it today? Abortion, sex, drugs, suicide, rock and roll. Look at the mess we're in. Rainbows. I think more now of a chicken in a nest than they do of a poor child inside a mother's womb. Look up you Romans tonight 1. Do you see what it says? When people think more of an animal than they do of the human, society is far wrong. Thinking Clochmills last week, poor farmer, 12,000 pigs, only two pigs wrong. And the vegan says, look at the disaster here. Pure brutality. So listen, that's the world we live in tonight. So thanks for taking the time to listen to me.